It's called The Black Man Is God. It's called The Black Man Is God.
Yeah, man. It's been a whirlwind couple of weeks. Actually been a whirlwind couple of months. But the NBA Finals are here. So I had to get back on the mic, even if just for a brief moment. The preseason podcast of the year is here. It's on and popping. Jay Hicks coming at y'all late on Wednesday, June the 5th of 2024. Summer's almost here. OTAs are going on in football. And nobody knows how to talk about the WNBA. But that's not what we're here to discuss right now. Actually, I'll make a brief statement about that in a minute. But we're here to talk NBA Finals on the preseason podcast of the year, the Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast. I am your host, Jay Hicks. Thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us again. Thank you all for supporting us over the years and over the decade plus that we've been doing this thing. You know, my wife's out of town, so I got all the kids to myself. So they're finally all down and sleeping right now, and the wife's out of town for one more night. I'm like, let me go ahead and squeeze in just another little quick podcast for y'all, because it's been a minute since I hollered at y'all, and I haven't had the chance to talk NBA playoffs with y'all like I wanted to. I was debating about how I should approach this podcast. Should I get a guest? Do I have time for that? Do I have the bandwidth? That's everybody's term these days. I don't have the emotional bandwidth to deal with that. Yeah, I didn't have a bandwidth for a podcast guest this time around. I wanted to, but I couldn't really pull it together. So what I decided to do was give y'all a little mini pod. I'm going to throw y'all 15 minutes, something like that, about the finals. Just get my thoughts out there. Share some of my observations, not just about the two combatants, the Celtics from Boston and the Mavericks from Dallas, but also just about how teams tend to approach the NBA Finals and kind of what I've noticed over years watching the NBA Finals. And so I appreciate y'all sliding with us as we partake in another NBA Finals. But real quickly on the Caitlin Clark thing, I just think the Caitlin Clark and WNBA coverage is way out of hand right now. So I just wanted to make a brief statement about that, because I'm not going to be talking about like that part of it anymore. Like, I've seen anytime Caitlin Clark misses a jumper or gets fouled, there's a think piece, there's somebody on Twitter admonishing somebody else, there's somebody coming to Caitlin's defense, there's somebody saying black women is jealous, there's somebody saying that black women aren't jealous even though they clearly look like they are a lot of times. There's all kinds of stuff that's going on. Nobody's really covering the basketball of it. Meanwhile, Asia Wilson's looking like Wilt Chamberlain, you know what I'm saying? Nobody's talking about that in the defending champion Las Vegas Aces. It's really crazy to me. And so all I'm going to say is that there seems to be far too many people that have entered themselves into the WNBA chat that ain't never been there before, that don't really know anything about women's basketball, don't have any historical context about the league itself or how to cover women's sports or anything like that. And they're just embarrassing themselves, honestly. Like, I just kind of stand back and laugh. And I'm not even watching WNBA games closely enough at this point to really have a lot of opinions about the games themselves. But I'm also smart enough to know not to delve that far into it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I might fire off a tweet here or there if I'm watching the game. But, you know, other than that, like, I can't dive deep into the WNBA like that because I haven't been following it that closely. Not because I don't like the sport. You know, I've always liked and respected the sport in the league. But it's just a matter of the bandwidth, as we talked about a minute ago, right? That emotional, not even emotional, that just a time commitment, you know what I'm saying? And I just don't have a lot of spare time these days, and so I got to kind of pick and choose what I can do. And so I just feel like anybody that's talking about Caitlin Clark right now, to anybody that's talking about Angel Reese or talking about anything that you've seen in the media regarding the WNBA in the last 7 to 10 days or even since the start of the season, they just look like dummies. They really do. Like, almost everybody looks foolish right now to me. So, you know, Jay-Z said, a wise man told you don't argue with fools because people from a distance can't tell who is who. I can't tell who is who right now. So I'm just going to sit this one out. Y'all have at it. But to me, it just looks like nobody really understands how to properly cover this league and these terrific athletes that are in the WNBA. And for the record, I think Caitlin Clark's going to be awesome down the road. She's kind of having a good rookie year compared to other rookies, but still kind of struggling compared to what the expectations were. She'll be fine. She's awesome. So, you know, we'll see. But I'm not going to dive too deep into that. I wanted to spend about, like I said, 10 to 15 minutes talking about the NBA Finals. The Celtics and the Mavs made it. did not have them on my dance card, but that's all right. I didn't actually make a formal prediction for the finals this year at the start of the playoffs, but there was always a thing with the Mavericks where it's like, well, Luka, you know how Luka can be, and you know how Kyrie can be. So if everything kind of falls into place and comes together, then yeah, there's a world in which they could make the finals this year. Well, guess what? It didn't fall into place, didn't it? You know, and Boston, well, they were supposed to be here before everybody just decided to roll out the red carpet for them. I mean, they just got the ultimate red carpet treatment from the basketball guys. Like, this is astonishing. This is like rivals the 2015 Warriors when, like, starting point guard that everybody Steph went up against got hurt in like all four rounds, and they just kind of moseyed on their way into a championship. This is rivaling that when the Celtics start the playoffs and they dodge Jimmy Butler and they dodge Donovan Mitchell and they dodge Jared Allen and they dodge Tyrese Halliburton, and they're just ducking and dodging the very best players on every team that they played in the Eastern Conference. And Joel Embiid's hurt, and the entire Knicks roster is made up of paper mache after Tibbs ran them into the ground predictably once again. So, I mean, it was just kind of like, okay, well, what do we do with Boston, right? So they're supposed to be here, and they're here. And statistically, they put up some historic numbers as a team. But when you watch them, you don't get that vibe from them. And I totally, that's how I feel about it anyways when I watch the Boston Celtics. I mean, is anybody really that impressed by them? Like, I ain't one of them. You know, they're definitely a good team, but I don't look at them as they're some kind of unbeatable juggernaut by any stretch of the imagination. Which means that the Dallas Mavericks could very well walk in there and smack them and take the championship right out of their little pot of gold. This might rob the little pot of gold, you know what I'm saying? But I just wanted to get off these few topics. So just kind of, I guess, the five things that I'm looking at. So give me like 10, 15 minutes and we'll call this a night. But here are the five things that I'm looking at. You could tell I didn't put a ton of time into this because I can't even think of a more creative name than the five things I was thinking of. I don't have any kind of catchy alliteration or nothing like that. I'm sorry, y'all. So forgive me. But thingy number one that I'm watching for in the 2024 NBA Finals, I'm looking at Kristaps Porzingis, and I'm looking at that injury. I feel like Porzingis is going to play a major role in the outcome here, or at least has the potential to. And that's not just because he used to play for the Mavs and it didn't really end well. And then he went to Boston after a stint in Washington. It's not just the revenge factor, but it's just the what he does for that team. I mean, if you watch the Celtics in the Eastern Conference playoffs this year, you saw how many minutes Al Horford was really playing after Porzingis went down. And by the way, Kristaps Porzingis has not played in a game since April 29th. Game one of the finals is tomorrow. It is June 6th. You know what I'm saying? April 29th to June 6th. This dude has not played at all. And he's just about to waltz onto the court and be like, yep, I'm at the NBA Finals, y'all. What up, y'all? Like, just pop up in the finals. And they're going to plug him right back into the rotation like everything's all good in the hood. And it's probably not going to go that way. He's probably going to need some time to get acclimated, to get his feet under him. And then that's compounded by the fact that, oh, yeah, it's the NBA Finals, right? So I don't see it necessarily being an easy transition for Mr. Crips, Knicks Tape, Chris Tapes, whatever my man Anthony Houston used to call him back in the day when he was with the Knicks. But Porzingis is a 20-point-per-game scorer, so this guy's not a slouch. He's 7'3". He averages 20 a game. He can hit threes, and he can block shots on defense. He really, really elevates this Boston team when he's out there. And he was healthy for much of the year, and that's probably why you saw the Celtics put up some amazing statistics as a team, as a unit throughout the course of the season. But, you know, he hasn't been there. And so we're just going to have to wait and see what he looks like. Because I'll tell you this, without that 20-point-per-game, 7'3", shot blocker / court stretcher that they had in Porzingis out there, the Celtics had Al Horford out there looking crazy in the early part of the playoffs because they were relying on old average Al to be out there for like 30, 35, 40 minutes a game. And this dude is like 36 years old, I think. I mean, Al Horford, you know what I'm saying? When he was in college, Young Jeezy just came out. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is how long Al Horford's been in this thing. Like, he's no spring chicken. And it's nice to have some veteran leadership on your playoff roster, and I'll touch on that in a minute. But, you know, I mean, the Cavaliers, when they played the Celtics, they were putting Al Horford in every action that they could. I mean, they were hunting him on defense, and they were making him work, and it looked like Al was just going to run out of steam before the end of the playoffs. Somehow, he found a second wind against Indiana, and I think in their closeout game, he had like six threes or something crazy like that. Like, he seems like he's back. So, if Porzingis can get himself right quickly, this could be one of those deals where the injury actually was a blessing in disguise for the Celtics, because it allows Horford to prepare himself and stretch his game a little bit more. And now all of a sudden the Celtics have this greater depth than they would have had, because not only do they get Porzingis back, but now they have an enhanced version of Al Horford. Or maybe Al Horford does run out of steam. I don't know. We got to have to wait and see. But it all comes down to Porzingis, because if Porzingis is doing his thing, then Horford's minutes get reduced and they're not going to miss they're not going to be relying on Al Horford as much. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Thingy number two of my five thingies. The Dallas Mavericks role players. And by the way, this is in no particular order, y'all. But the Dallas Mavericks role players. Again, it's not really a shock to anybody that the Mavericks made the NBA Finals with Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving as their double-headed, or their two-headed super clutch monster that can make pretty much any shot on earth with the game on the line. That's not a shock to anybody that they made it this far. What does have people surprised, though, is the PJ Washingtons, the Derrick Jones Juniors, the Daniel Gaffords, and the Derek Lively's of the world that have carried them to this point. Maybe carried is too strong of a word, but they would not be here without those four guys. Those have been their three through six most important players in these playoffs in some particular order. And they've gotten contributions from elsewhere. You know, Jaden Hardy was a young dude that I liked back when he was in the G League. Or he might have been in high school when I first seen Jaden Hardy play. And I thought he had a lot of potential. And he's even given the Mavericks some minutes in the playoffs. Tim Hardaway Jr. has pretty much been out of the rotation. But I've always liked his game. And he's got some talent. I could see a scenario in which he has a moment in these finals. Maxi Kleber coming off injury. You know, he hasn't been much of a factor yet. But maybe his time is coming. Josh Green, right? So there's been other guys, right? But Washington, Jones, Gafford, and Lively have been the catalyst for Dallas kind of going to the next level here. And I want to shout out an analyst that has been covering the NBA for some time since his retirement. You're probably thinking I'm talking about Charles Barkley, and I'm actually not this time. I'm talking about his teammate, Shaquille O'Neal. Shaquille O'Neal's analysis as a studio talking head has been under scrutiny for some time. And I get it, because every time they throw it to Shaq on Inside the NBA or at halftime, he's kind of like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? You just get him down on the block, you know, two's dribble, jump hook him to death, barbecue chicken, you know what I'm saying? He's got to go out and dominate. Like, that's his analysis basically for every center, it seems like. And if they're not doing that and they're not averaging 35 a game, he's taking shots at them. That's what it seems like. And all right. Understood, point taken, right? But where I want to give Shaq his props is that from the moment he started in this analyst role, from the like literally day one, I have never heard another analyst more just outwardly and just aggressively and flagrantly talk about the importance of role players when it comes to winning a championship. Nobody has been. Shaq owns that corner as far as I'm concerned. I've never heard another guy talk more openly about the importance of role players. He calls them the others. He nicknamed them the others. Remember the others? When Shaq used to talk about that? That is so true. The more you study this stuff and the more you dive into it and the more basketball you watch over the years, we all have this perception that it's a very linear thing, and you have these certain guys who can lift the team up as a superstar and carry them to victory and carry them to a championship ring. You have certain stars that can do that, and then you have certain stars that can't. You have LeBron James and you have James Harden, right? Like, that's what people kind of believe that this thing is. And yes, LeBron James is one of those guys that can do that. And of course, James Harden is completely incapable of ever doing that. So we know that these things do exist. The fallacy, though, is that people tend to believe that that is the norm. When in reality, the norm is there's a lot of very good players, and usually there's a lot of luck involved that ends up determining who hoists that trophy at the end of the day. A lot of things have to fall into place. A lot of luck has to be had. There has to be a lot of good fortune for the team that wins, be it injuries to their opponent or just a lucky shot that goes in. Who knows what? A lucky break of any kind. That's for any champion in any sport, to be honest with you, any team sport. There's going to be a lot of luck involved. But particularly in basketball, you look at the luck of just any team. I mean, I've talked about it in the past about how my guy, Charles Barkley, did not win the championship ring. But, I mean, this guy was one of the most unlucky superstars of his day. When you consider that, just for example, he lost to the NBA champion 4 times in a 5-year stretch. But beyond that, he ended up losing on a game-winning three-pointer. His season ended on a game-winning three-pointer 3 times in the mid-90s. In 93 to Paxson, in 95 to Mario Elie, in 97 to John Stockton. 3 of the most memorable three-pointers to win playoff games ever in NBA history. All of them happened to Charles within a 6-year stretch, a 5-year stretch. You know what I'm saying? And like, the odds of all those shots going in and sending his team home were probably pretty low, especially in those days when people couldn't shoot like that. But these things happen sometimes. And so the point is that your role players go a lot further in determining the legacies of your favorite players than any of you care to realize. And that goes for Kobe Bryant when Ron Artest is making a game winner against Phoenix in the playoffs, or Ron Artest hits the big three-pointer in Game 7 against the Celtics. Derek Fisher hit the big shot for Kobe in the Orlando series. Like, Steve Kerr hitting shots for Jordan, John Paxson hitting shots for Jordan. Like, these things are the undersold stories of the greatest players that we know today. And we say, oh, so-and-so is this all-time great player because they won X number of championships. They don't win those championships if the others don't hit those shots. So bringing that point full circle, when you look at the Mavs and you look at these guys, PJ Washington, Derek Jones, and Lively and Gafford, nobody knew that they were going to be like this. You know what I'm saying? PJ Washington's averaging 14 a game almost in the playoffs. He's shooting 36% from three. Derek Jones, who was a dunker for his whole career, that's all we knew him for was dunking. He's shooting nearly 40% from three right now and 50% from the field almost, averaging 10 points a game. And then you have Gafford and Lively. Gafford, which, you know, you got to hand it to Nico Harrison for making a move to get these guys. Gafford was on an also-ran Wizards team, you know, like nobody was checking for Daniel Gafford, which, by the way, though, I do think that's a smart tactic that all general managers should do at the trade deadline. You better scour the worst teams in the league and find that diamond in the rough. Go to the worst teams in the league, literally the dead last team in the league. There's one good player on that team that can help you. But the thing is that you don't know exactly how well those guys are going to perform on the big stage. I think back to the NBA Finals of 2017 after the Cavaliers brought in Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver had been one of the elite shooters of all time and had a phenomenal career as a three-point marksman. He comes to Cleveland, does okay in the playoffs, gets to the finals. He can't hit a shot. I think he just built it up for all those years in his head as a veteran player, having never gotten that far. He finally got to the stage and he kind of choked. You know what I mean? You just don't know how these dudes are going to respond. So you can make these moves at the deadline, but you don't know until you throw these guys in there. Well, we don't know what PJ Washington, Jones, Gafford, and Lively are going to be doing in the NBA Finals. You know, it was nice that they did it in the playoffs. It was great that they did it in the conference finals. The NBA Finals is a different animal, so we'll have to check and see how they do. Thingy number three, as I try to pick up the pace a little bit. Jason Tatum. Is this Tatum's time? And everybody's going to be checking for Jason Tatum. I get that, but this feels like it's the right time for Jason Tatum, and I'm going to touch on the maturity aspect of a team in a moment, but I just feel like Tatum has been here before. He's been to the finals. He's not the best player in the series. We know Luka Doncic is the best player on either team, but that doesn't mean that Jason Tatum can't rise to the occasion, can't be the best player on a given night or on enough nights to win the series. Doesn't mean that Jaylen Brown can't be that guy a few times. I mean, Jaylen Brown has probably outplayed Jason Tatum in these playoffs to this point. So it would not be a shock for Jaylen Brown to be that guy. But when you look at the age and the experience of the Celtics, I mean, Tatum was in the conference finals as a baby in 2018. Remember that? Like, he was a baby. Literally looked like a baby. Little light-skinned baby. That's what he looked like. So, I mean, as a matter of fact, Jason Tatum is now 26 years old, I believe. He has a 108 games of experience, playoff experience, that is, on his resume at age 26. 108 games for Jason Tatum. Jaylen Brown is, I mean, I think Tatum may be 25, or maybe, I think Tatum's 26 and Jaylen Brown is 26, about to turn 27 in, I think, towards the end of the year. Jaylen Brown has 119 games on his playoff resume. So again, 108 games for Tatum, 119 games for Jaylen Brown. To put that in perspective, Kyrie Irving, the elder statesman of the Dallas Mavericks, the guy who's been to now, what, not one, two, three, four NBA Finals appearances, I believe, in his career, that Kyrie Irving, he has 91 career playoff games. And that's before we even talk about Al Horford, who I guess we already did talk about, and Drew Holiday, who has a championship ring under his belt. So this is a very experienced Boston team. This is not just some team that has never been here before. They were ahead of schedule in the late 20-teens. You know what I'm saying? And now they're right on time. Luka Doncic is 25 years old. Luka Doncic has been playing in big games since he was literally a teenager. So I don't think that this stage is going to do anything to him. But when I talked about those role guys a minute ago, the PJ Washingtons and the Gaffords of the world, who have been playing way above their head to this point, Derrick Jones and them, when you look across the aisle, you got Tatum, who's like 26, Drew Holiday's 33, Jaylen Brown's 27. Derek White's 29. When you think of NBA champions, the core of that group typically is between like 27 and 30 years old, maybe 31. But that's the prime championship window, is when your best players are 27 to 30 years old. That's what you want, okay? Tatum's still a little young for that. He's like 25, 26, but he's been in these moments. He's already been to the finals, and he's been in these playoff games for years now. He's like in his seventh, eighth year in the playoffs already. Jaylen Brown, 27. Drew Holiday, a little outside of that. He's 33, but Derek White's 29. You know what I mean? Even if you want to count the guys like Peyton Pritchard, Sam Hauser, Luke Kornet, and Porzingis, hello, they're all between the ages of 26 and 28 years old, something like that. So, again, Porzingis, White, Brown, Tatum, like these guys are all in their late 20s. That's the wheelhouse that you want to go for. When you look at Dallas, we know that Luka's on the younger side. He's never been to the finals. We know Kyrie's done this before, but he's 32 years old. He's a little bit outside that window. And then, yeah, PJ Washington, Derrick Jones, Gafford, those guys are all like 25, 26. So they're still not only are they not in that 27 to 30 window, but they're also not as talented as those guys in Boston. You know what I mean? If we're being completely honest. So that'll be something to watch for. It just feels like this is Boston's time. And which brings me to my fourth thingy, maturity versus prep. I'm really going to be curious to see how that plays itself out, because typically, as I've kind of grown in doing this stuff on the podcast and all this, I've kind of come to realize that the more mature team usually wins in the playoffs. That's for NFL, that's for NBA, whichever team is, you know, not old, but the older team that's been there longer, that's done it more times, that's been on the stage, those teams have a real advantage more often than not. And Boston has that, which we talked about already. So the maturity advantage, way in Boston's favor. Outside of Kyrie Irving, I'm not sure if anybody else on the roster has played in the NBA Finals for Dallas. In fact, as I look it over, I don't think they have. Okay? But Boston, their whole team was in the finals in the bubble, right? And even if not all those guys were there at this point, we know the principal guys were. Brown and Tatum definitely were. We know Drew Holiday has a ring. We know Al Horford has been in the playoffs, you know what I'm saying, since people was getting jiggy with it. You know what I mean? So these guys, the experience factor and that maturity thing, like, it just feels like Boston is ready for this. And we don't know. That's more of a question mark for Dallas. However, The Mavericks have been prepped for this moment in a way that the Celtics haven't. I talked about the injuries that the Celtics have faced throughout their journey to the NBA Finals. The Mavericks have had a difficult road, right? They came in, they were on the road in all three series, and they knocked off the 4-seed Clippers, they knocked off the 1-seed Thunder, and they knocked off, Minnesota was a 3-seed, they knocked them off too. But kind of to my point about maturity and experience, they definitely had that. You could argue it about the Clippers, but they definitely had that advantage over the Thunder and the Timberwolves. So that kind of played in Dallas's advantage. When those games got tight, when it was late, they knew how to execute. They weren't scared. They knew what they were doing, and it mattered. And so I feel like it could matter in this situation. But I, just as I always love to pick the mature team, I also always love to pick the team who's more battle-tested. And at the risk of sounding like a podcasting hack here, Dallas is definitely more battle-tested. So I like both of those things. It'll be interesting to see which one wins out. And the last thing that I'm going to be checking for is Kyrie Irving. Specifically, we need to see Cavs Kyrie. Are we going to get Cavs Kyrie? Kyrie's been very good in these playoffs, but he has not been Cavs Kyrie. I don't think people really realize how dope Kyrie Irving was as a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers in the playoffs, okay? In his playoff career in Cleveland, which was 52 games, Kyrie averaged 24 points, 5 assists, 3 boards, a steal and a half a game on 47, 42, and 88 shooting splits. Okay? That is fantastic. Only 2 turnovers a game with all that dribbling and ball handling he does. You know, all that hot sizzle he puts on it, right? He's still not even turning the ball over like that. So that was throughout his entire career, even in the series against Golden State where they won the title. Everybody remembers LeBron for how great he was, and he was great. But there was a legitimate argument some people were trying to make at that time that Kyrie should have been the Finals MVP in 2016. He averaged 27 a game with 4 boards and 4 assists and 2 steals in that 7-game series on 47, 41, and 94 shooting splits. He outplayed Steph Curry rather handily in that series. And so, as a matter of fact, I remember I had at the time, there was some Golden State Warrior fans, friends in my life. Like I had friends of mine that were Warrior fans that were in my life at that time. And they didn't know each other, but they told me they weren't afraid of LeBron James. They were petrified of Kyrie Irving, okay? They were petrified. Kyrie had Warrior fans wetting themselves all up and down the bay. You seen that yellow on the court? That wasn't just the colors of the team. That was pee from the crowd. You know what I'm saying? Peeing all over the joint because they were terrified of Kyrie Irving. And guess what? They were right. They were right to be scared. So are we going to see that level Kyrie? I don't know. Kyrie's 32 years old now. If you tell me Kyrie's going to be averaging 26 points a game and shooting, you know, 48, 42, and 90 from the foul line, I think Dallas has a real chance to win. I don't know if Kyrie's going to be that special, but we'll have to wait and see. If he's doing all that and hitting shots at the end of the game, yeah, it could happen. But having said all that, and you notice I didn't mention Luka as one of my 5 thingies. Luka was not mentioned. Why? Because I expect him to be great anyway. That's pretty much a given. He averaged 35, 15 boards and 12 assists against Boston this year. He averaged 34 points a game during the year. He's been awesome the entire season in the playoffs. He put on the Grim Reaper mask in that closeout game against Minnesota. So I'm good with Luka. I have no concerns that he's going to be awesome. He'll get his numbers, but it's the people around him and specifically those role guys that I have real questions about. When I heard that the Mavericks had 89% of the money, I think it was on ESPN Bet, but 89% of the money for this series is coming in on Dallas as an underdog. That kind of sealed it for me that the pick is the Boston Celtics. I'm going to go Celtics in 6. I think Dallas can absolutely win the series. I think Dallas can steal game 1, although I would have liked Dallas' chances more to steal game 1 had they come right in off of their series and into the finals. But we had such a long layoff. The fact that Boston has played, excuse me, the fact that Dallas has played so much better in the playoffs than Boston has is kind of erased now because of this long layoff. So I think that was an opportunity missed by Dallas that was of no fault of theirs. But, you know, I feel like Boston is getting healthy, or they're almost fully healthy now with Porzingis coming back. If Porzingis can give them anything like what he looked like during the regular season, I think that Boston should have this thing in the bag. Even if he's not at that same level, I still think the Celtics will win the series. So I'm going to give it to Boston in six games. They got two great defenders that have size that they can throw at Luka to slow him down. They have two great guards in the backcourt that they can throw at Kyrie to try to slow him down. And it'll really be on the others of the Dallas Mavericks to try to pull this thing out. So I'm going to go with the Celtics. I can't say I'm particularly proud of it. But I feel like this is their time, man. I feel like they can really get it done. And so I'm going to go ahead and wrap this puppy up, you know what I'm saying? But thank y'all for listening. It's kind of a mini pod. I know we normally go for an hour plus because we built like that. We built different over here at the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. But this time I just want to give y'all a little something to chew on as we went into game one of the NBA Finals tomorrow night. So thank y'all for listening. You can always get at us, like and comment and rate the podcast. Find us on X or Twitter. It's still Twitter to me. Find us on Facebook. Let us know what you think. Give us your prediction for the NBA Finals. And we'll be sitting there watching right along with y'all. And we'll be looking at a mock draft here pretty soon before you know it. So stay tuned, y'all. We got more to come. Jay Hicks, Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. We out. Peace.